Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Cigna Eating Disorder Awareness Series conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Kate Harner. Please go ahead.
Welcome, and thank you for calling into Cigna's Eating Disorder Awareness Series. My name is Kate Harner, and I'm a care manager on the eating disorder team at Cigna. Due to the format of this call, you'll not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of this conference, you'll be transferred into a brief five-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After the survey, you will be able to ask questions on today's seminar. A handout for the seminar is available online at www.cignabehavioral.com. On the left-hand side of the screen, click on Visit Our Education and Resource Center. Then click on Eating Disorder Education and Resources, and finally click on Eating Disorder Awareness, a Cigna Education Series. At the top of the screen by today's date, you'll find the link for today's handout. Again, visit us online at www.cignabehavioral.com. On the left-hand side, click on Visit Our Education and Resource Center, then click on Eating Disorder Education and Resources, and finally, click on Eating Disorder Awareness, a Cigna Education Series. At the top of the screen by today's date, you'll find the link for today's handout. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Jeannie Anderson from CRC Health Group. Jeannie is a counselor with the E-Get Going program. Today, she'll be sharing information with us on the role of continuing care for individuals with eating disorders. Welcome, Jeannie.
Thank you so much, Kate. I want to thank Kate for inviting me today. It's an honor to be here to be able to be part of the Eating Disorder Awareness Series. Good morning or afternoon to all of you, depending on what time zone you're in. Today, I'm going to be talking about the role of continuing care in successful management of patients with eating disorders. But before we kind of roll into the continuing care piece, I thought I would talk about the importance of identifying an eating disorder and sort of an overview of an eating disorder program. Now, the mission of an eating disorder program is to treat eating disorders as the serious diseases they are by providing an integrated approach that takes into account and treats all aspects of body, mind, spirit in the context of healthy families. In a program, we address not just eating and food-related behaviors, but the root causes of the eating disorder. Examples of this might include a history of trauma and family of origin issues such as alcoholism or drug addiction, and an extreme focus on appearance. Eating disorder patients usually have struggled with issues relating to their weight from a very young age. This sets up a family dynamic that can contribute to the perpetuation of the eating disorder, with the eating disorder patient gaining unusual attention around issues of food, weight, and eating behaviors. One important component of the family's recovery is to disengage from the vicious cycle of focusing on how the eating disorder patient looks or trying to force them to eat or reason with them about how much they should weigh. Just as in the case of a family member of an alcoholic, we recommend that each family member become educated about the effects of eating disorders, learn their role in the process, and strive to change their personal dynamic that contributes to the problem. And I would add here, too, it's very important for the family members of someone struggling with an eating disorder to make sure that you are taking good care of yourself through this process. Because sometimes, you know, just as living with an alcoholic, the person who's dealing with it can become just as ill, physically, emotionally, spiritually. So I think it's very important that I always go to the three C's. I can't control it, I can't cure it, and I didn't cause it. And because we're so closely intertwined with our family members, we think, you know, is this something in their youth that happened, or how did this happen? But I think it's very important for family members to take care of themselves, use the three C's, and know your limits and boundaries as to how you can support your loved one. Now, an eating disorder program integrative approach helps patients recover by restoration of physical health and well-being through healthy diet and natural supplements where appropriate, shifting the relationship with food from the problem to the symptom of the root cause, encouraging them to gain insight into the reasons they became anorexic, bulimic, or a compulsive overeater, offering skills and strategies which are practiced while in the program, which can be used to maintain their health and well-being, treatment of any coexisting medical or psychiatric condition to support recovery, such as depression, anxiety, using the 12 steps, removing emotional blocks to healing through things like EMDR, somatic experiencing, and other mind-body therapies. Now, some basic facts about eating disorders. Eating disorders are, and this is on my first PowerPoint here, basic facts about eating disorders. Eating disorders are extreme expressions of a range of weight and food issues experienced by both men and women. They include anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, and compulsive overeating. All are serious emotional problems that can have life-threatening consequences. The defining features of anorexia nervosa are an intense and irrational fear of body fat and weight gain, an iron determination to become thinner and thinner, and a misperception of body weight and shape to the extent that the person may feel or see fat even when emaciation is clear to others. These psychological characteristics contribute to drastic weight loss and defiant refusal to maintain a healthy weight for height and age. And then another common one is the bulimia nervosa. It's characterized by self-perpetuating and self-defeating cycles of binge eating and purging. During a binge, the person consumes a large amount of food in a rapid, automatic, and helpless fashion. This may anesthetize hunger, anger, and other feelings, but it eventually creates a physical discomfort and anxiety about weight gain. Thus, the person's purges the food eaten, usually by including vomiting or resorting to a combination of restrictive dieting, excessive exercise, laxative, and diuretics. Binge eating disorder or compulsive eating is characterized primarily by periods of impulsive gorging or continuous eating. While there is no purging, there may be sporadic fasts or repetitive diets. Body weight may vary from normal to mild, moderate, to severe obesity. A significant number of people suffer from other eating disorders as well, which do not strictly fit the criteria that I've mentioned. For instance, some individuals abuse vomiting or exercise without binging as a form of weight management, while there are others who indulge in repetitive episodes of binging without purging. Eating disorders arise from a combination of long-standing psychological, interpersonal, and social conditions. Feelings of inadequacy, depression, anxiety, and loneliness, as well as troubled family and personal relationships, may contribute to the development of an eating disorder. Our culture, with its unrelenting idealization of fitness and the perfect body, is often a contributing factor. Once started, eating disorders may become self-perpetuating. Dieting, binging, and purging help some people to cope with the painful emotions and to feel as if they are in control of their lives. Yet at the same time, these behaviors undermine physical health, self-esteem, and a sense of competence and control. Very quickly, some warning signs that we can look for in our loved ones or friends. A marked increase or decrease in weight not related to a medical condition. The development of abnormal eating habits such as severe dieting, preference for strange foods, withdrawn or ritualized behavior at mealtime, or secretive binging. An intense preoccupation with weight and body image, compulsive or excessive exercising, self-induced vomiting, periods of fasting or laxative, diet pill or diuretic abuse, and feelings of isolation, depression, and irritability. So I hope that this sort of covered what we try to achieve in treatment, what some of the warning signs are, and the importance of building a strong foundation of continuing care, which I was really excited to do this topic on today. I've been holding the eating disorder continuing care group through eGetGoing, and that's where patients who typically complete a residential treatment program, come into the group for 1 hour, one time a week, and talk about how their recovery is going. And so many of my patients have told me, if I didn't stick to my treatment plan, if I didn't stay involved in my recovery day to day on a continual basis, my chances for relapse would be higher. And we're going to talk a little bit about relapse. It does occur, but how, you know, a person can get right back on track. I want you to imagine here, I'm going to do a little scenario. I want you to imagine that your loved one is in treatment, and she is standing in a corner in the room by herself. And then we are going to have the psychiatrist come and stand behind her. And then we are going to have her eating disorder. And the eating disorder is going to come up and stand in right behind her, in between her and the psychiatrist. Actually, I'm sorry. The eating disorder is going to stand behind the psychiatrist. So we've got our patient, the psychiatrist, and then we've got the person representing the eating disorder. Now, I'm going to ask the patient's therapist to come up and stand behind the psychiatrist. Then I'm going to ask the patient's support group, 12-step sponsor, to come up and stand behind the therapist. And then I'm going to ask the patient's outpatient program to come up and stand behind the 12-step sponsor. And then I'm going to ask a family member to come up and stand behind the outpatient and in front of the disease. Now you'll see, if you can just kind of picture this, that the patient is up front and all these treatment modules are between her and the disease. The disease now has been pushed all the way to the back. So we've got our psychiatrist, we've got our therapist, we've got our intensive outpatient program, we've got our 12-step support group, we've got our family member cheering them on and supporting them, and we've got the disease all the way in the back. Now, what can typically happen is the patient is still in the front, protected by all of these treatments, protected by their ongoing commitment and their care. The patient may say, and this is where our cognitive distortions come in with an eating disorder, you know, I've been going to those 12-step meetings for a while now, and my sponsor, she's good, but you know what, I learned everything that I need to know in treatment, so I'm going to have her go sit down. Then my psychiatrist, you know, those appointments are really expensive, you know, the medications are, they're okay, but you know what, I think I can do without them. And the patient stops going to their psychiatrist appointments. And the therapist and the nutritionist, you know, I've got this eating down. The therapist, you know, we've done all we can. That's expensive too. I'm doing well. I think that I can discontinue those appointments. Oh, and the outpatient program. I'm not going to make time for the outpatient program because I've just spent 30 days in a primary treatment facility. Now, what you see here is there's nothing left in between the eating disorder and the disease. The disease is right back up there in front, and the eating disorder will have no one to turn to except their eating disorder. So one of the most important things I can tell you in continuing your role in continuing care in an eating disorder is to utilize the services of a treatment team. You want to utilize the continuing care of all those supports that I gave you, and there's more actually too, but building a strong foundation. You know, we don't just continue. It's as if you think of the person who is an alcoholic and you just take the alcohol away. That is not going to cure the real problems. And you'll have a person typically acting the same way, only without the alcohol. So same with an eating disorder. You want to get to the root causes of those behaviors. You want to help the patient to experience a full life change spiritually, emotionally, physically, and emotionally, psychologically. Some advice for loved ones, and this is important here. is remember that your loved one has the problem, and it's up to them to do the work. Make a pact of complete honesty. Be patient, sympathetic, non-judgmental, and a good listener. Let your loved one know that you care and have his or her best interests at heart. Accept that recovery is a process and does not happen quickly. Help your loved one to be patient as well. Do not be controlling of your loved one's life. You are limited in what you can do to help. You may need to learn about letting go. When your loved one's behavior affects you, express yourself without placing guilt or blame. Try not to take on her actions personally. Use I messages explaining your feelings and concerns. You may need to disengage to take care of yourself. Have compassion. Your loved one may be overwhelmed as she or he gets in touch with the painful issues underlying the behavior. Your loved one will need your support at these times more than ever. Always remind yourself that your loved one uses bulimia as a substitute for confronting painful feelings or experiences. Ask what, if anything, you can do to help encourage her or him to find healthier ways to deal with the pain. Try not to guess what she wants. Encourage your loved ones to express needs. If you have questions, ask. And encourage her or him to enter professional eating disorder therapy, of course, keeping in mind that no single approach to recovery works for everyone. Be available for joint counseling. Be flexible and open in supporting him or her to do whatever approach is chosen. For example, you may know someone who goes to a particular therapist. Your loved one may relate to another one better. So, again, it's continuing with that foundation and that treatment team that are so important. Some advice for overcoming an eating disorder. Start with little changes. Again, you can't make big switches necessary to recover from the eating disorder all at once, and that's okay. Start by making smaller changes that don't overwhelm you. Keep an open mind and be willing to listen. Be a willing spirit. We cannot drag our loved ones into recovery. We need to decide that we're willing to set some goals and commit to modifying our behavior in order to reach those goals. We have to believe that we can. We have to believe that we can do this and not let our disorder be a life sentence. We have to give ourselves permission to believe that people do recover from this disorder. They do. There's hope. And don't hide it. Don't be secretive anymore. Try to talk about what's going on with you. The point is that we need to stop hiding guilt, shame, and deception because that all contributes to the disorder. And, again, accepting help from others, finding an expert who can get us through this. One of my PowerPoints talks about recovery requiring action. A good sign that you're making progress in your recovery from an eating disorder is the ability to decrease those negative behaviors and thoughts that kept us tied into our eating disorder. Recovery is a process. The more coping skills and tools we can develop and implement in our life, the better our chances for success. Motivation. I want to talk for a minute about motivation. Motivation is very important. We help our patients to continue to find their motivation. With an eating disorder, sometimes I'll ask my patients, what was the payoff for being stuck where you were? Because there's always a payoff in anything we do. There's a payoff in the behavior we choose. We're getting something from it. So when I ask that question to a lot of my patients, they would say, this was the payoff. This is what I was getting from it. It would keep me isolated, or it would keep me shielded from relationships or whatever it was. So we have to have the motivation to recover, to stay involved in our continuing care, be stronger than the payoff that we were getting. And the more coping skills and tools we develop, we can implement in life, the better our chances of success. So filling that toolbox, learning, utilizing those tools when needed. One of my next PowerPoints is the importance of becoming your own best friend. It's common for anorexic and bulimics to be perfectionists. When they cannot achieve perfection in their endeavors, they unrealistically blame and find the need to punish themselves by restriction or starvation or purging and binging. Compulsive overeaters tend to be perceived as unmotivated and lazy when, in essence, they are often depressed and isolated in their need for attention, their need for affection. They often fill the void with food. So one of the things we strive for in the group is, how do you become your own best friend? How do you develop that very crucial and important relationship with yourself first before we can start to have that relationship with others? So very important there. Some things we talk about, some ways in which you can spoil yourself in healthy ways, you know, listening to music, getting a massage, taking a yoga class, spending time gardening, getting a manicure, pedicure, facial, giving a teddy bear a hug, developing a network of friends, taking a bubble bath and candlelight. Very healthy coping mechanisms. One of my patients used the positive affirmation so much. And, you know, when she tended to kind of get back into depression during the groups or started sliding backwards, you know, I gently remind her, hey, where's your affirmations? And she said, oh, that's right. I haven't, you know, I took them down and I have to put them back up. And it'd be amazing by the next group, she'd be starting to do better. She would get her affirmations out and put little signs on the mirror and little reminders of what was important in her life and her recovery. And, again, talking about what was going on in the group for her, talking to her therapist, talking to her psychiatrist, just being surrounded with that treatment team is so crucial and vital to continuing care. Again, it's a lifelong process. You know, I've got people 25 years in eating disorder recovery, and a lot of times they tell me, you know what, Jeannie, I still go back to the basic solid things that I practiced when I first got out of treatment, and I use those tools. And many times later in recovery, you'll see that patients start to develop a path of spiritual acceptance. Later in recovery, they start to deal with some of those family of origin issues. Those aren't all things we expect to see in initial early recovery. In initial early recovery, again, it's about stabilization. It's about getting the eating disorder manageable, getting the weight and healthy weight, getting the body functioning appropriately, and then starting to work on some of those underlying issues and building, again, that treatment team. So if you have someone that's suffering from an eating disorder, please be patient and, you know, support them to support themselves by continuing with their care. Manage relationships that cause you harm. Identify any relationships in your life that may affect your eating disorder in a negative way and begin to find effective ways to manage them. Many times there are people who can hold us back in our recovery, or if we have friends that also were, you know, participating in eating disorders, or we were on websites. There's these websites now that promote anorexia, and women are showing pictures of themselves and how thin they are. You know what? All that stuff has to go. Those are just high-risk situations, as well as saying no to the perfect painted bodies on fashion magazines and not getting trapped into that unrealistic thinking of perfectionism. So a lot of my patients will steer away from old things that they used to do or buy into or believe in, and start changing them with more realistic views and acceptance of themselves. One thing that's very important for people in recovery is to take a daily inventory. It's a fact-finding and a fact-facing process, and it is an effort to discover the truth. Again, denial, rationalization, minimization of our eating disorder, being secretive, lying, these are all things that just go hand in hand. So one of the important things with taking a daily inventory is that we know we're not going to have it perfect. We've had years of thinking and doing. So these thoughts are not going to just be cured overnight. But we can make progress every day. We can strive to bring the positive in, to be truthful, to you know, the opposite of boredom. We want to be prompt. We can start to work on our low self-esteem and improve our self-esteem, our emotional issues and improving those. We want to eliminate the negative and accentuate the positive. And when we kind of do that fact-finding inventory, you say you do it in the evening, we're going to, you know, take a kind of a debit sheet, and we're going to look not only at the negative, okay, where did I maybe not do so well today, but let's really look at the positive too. What things did I do well? Maybe I did look in the mirror and tell myself that I loved myself or that I'm perfect the way I am, and I didn't binge today, and I stayed true to my eating plan today, and I had all my vitamins. You know, but, you know, maybe I went on the scale. That was a negative. Well, it's okay. Tomorrow I'll jump right back in and stay towards positive. So, again, it's a lot of repetitiveness with what we tell ourselves in our minds and making sure that we have that support along the way. Reaching out is the first tool that requires us to show up and interact with other human beings. No one can benefit from isolation. We all need the support of others walking the same path. I can't tell you the importance of support groups. They are wonderful, and especially 12-step support groups, because if anyone is not familiar with the 12 steps, it's the 12 steps that was based on Alcoholics Anonymous, that was founded by Bill Wilson and Bob Smith many years ago. And the 12 steps can be applied to so many different problems in your life. And what I really like about that is that it addresses, it's not a religious program, but a very spiritual, gives us concrete instructions in the 12 steps for helping us to live a productive life with away from our disease. So, again, if anyone's not familiar with the 12 steps, you know, pick up a book. You can find them. There's 12-step meetings online. And take a look at those and ask for support for others to guide you. Let's see what else I have here. Building a support system, as I've talked about, continuing care would involve a psychiatrist, an individual therapist, a family therapist. Let's talk about the family for a minute. When a patient leaves treatment, if we've got this patient who's been doing all this work on themselves, and they are around a very, very positive environment where they're with a clinical team and getting all the care they need, and what happens if they go right home to the family and no one has changed in the family? The family is still communicating the same way. The family is still holding secrets. That patient is not going to thrive well in that environment. That's why it's so important for the family to take care of themselves and get well as well, you know, and not police the patient's recovery. You know, I know my son actually came out of treatment, and he said, you know, one of the boundaries he said is, Mom, it's not your job to police my recovery. And where I thought I was helping, I wasn't. And I learned that he could ask me when he needed something, and he could speak up for himself. He was an adult, and I didn't need to just kind of fix or take care of everything. In turn, that gave me an enormous amount of freedom to focus on things that I could only change within myself, that I couldn't control the other person. I couldn't control their behaviors. I could look for signs. I could look for things that I thought were not right and sure, maybe address those, but I didn't have to 24/7, you know, police recovery. And I think in turn that gave our family a lot more freedom. A nutritionist can be a wonderful support because they're going to set up a nutritional guideline. And also that's ever-changing. As our bodies change and we begin to, our body begins to adjust to a new healthy weight, a nutritionist can help us with modifications. They can teach us about intuitive eating. Many times portions are measured out when we come into continuing care, into recovery. Things are portioned out and measured until we kind of have a sense of what are the nutrients our bodies need. And then we usually try to move patients into a more of an intuitive eating and listening to their body. And I have patients say, oh, my God, I can't trust myself. Are you kidding? I'll binge on everything. But it's amazing the wisdom that our bodies will give us when we become healthy and comfortable to listen to our bodies. And that there's also many books written on intuitive eating that, that you can pick up as well that, that are wonderful. But many times the nutritionist is just a main focus in the beginning and helping the patient make adjustments and guidelines to the eating. Support groups I talked about. Many times support groups are found. This is a wonderful eating disorder awareness series, something I'm glad you're all listening to. Support groups can be found through local hospitals, churches, eating disorder programs local in your community many times offer outpatient support groups. So utilize those. 12-step programs are free. Supportive friends and family. And, again, self-help and meditation books are absolutely, incredible. I advise that anyone that is suffering from an eating disorder or is a family member, get those self-help meditation books because they can start to really put your mind in a good direction, a good thought process after reading a meditation. So those are important. And my last PowerPoint was that we end our groups with, well, memo to self. How will I choose to take care of myself and my body? And everyone in the group would share ways in which they wanted to, their goals for the week. How were they going to make changes or what were they going to do differently? I've got some tips on how to help a friend or a loved one with eating and body image issues. I understand this can be a very difficult and scary time. I assure you, you're doing a great thing by looking for, more information. That this is so important that you learn and educate. And that's the first one, actually. Learn as much as you can about eating disorders. Read books, articles, and brochures. Know the difference between facts and myths about weight, nutrition, and exercise. Knowing the facts will help you reason against any inaccurate ideas that your friend may be using as excuses to maintain their disordered eating patterns. Be honest, talk openly and honestly about your concerns with the person who is struggling with eating or body image problems. Avoiding it or ignoring it won't help. Be caring, but be firm. Caring about your friend does not mean being manipulated by them. Your friend must be responsible for their actions and the consequences of those actions. Avoid making rules, promises, or expectations that you cannot or will not uphold. For example, I promise not to tell anyone, or if you do this one more time, I'll never talk to you again. Okay, so there's a difference there. Compliment your friend's wonderful personality, success, or accomplishments. Remind your friend that true beauty is not simply skin deep. Be a good role model in regard to sensible eating, exercise, and self-acceptance. Tell someone. It may seem difficult to know when, if at all, to tell someone else about your concerns. Addressing body image or eating problems is in their beginning stages, offers your friend the best chance for working through these issues and becoming healthy again. Don't wait until the situation is so severe that your friend's life is in danger. Your friend needs as much support and understanding as possible. What should I say? Set aside time to talk. Make sure you have a place that's free from distractions and set a time to talk about what's going on. Communicate your concerns. Ask your friend to explore these concerns with a counselor, a doctor, a nutritionist, another health professional. Again, there's so many treatment options out there for eating disorders. Avoid conflicts or a battle of the wills. If your friend refuses to acknowledge that there is a problem or any reason for you to be concerned, restate your feelings and the reasons for them and leave yourself open and available as a supportive listener. Avoid placing blame, shame, or guilt on your friend regarding their actions or attitudes. Do not use accusatory you statements like you just need to eat or you are acting irresponsibly. Instead, again, go back to those I statements. I'm concerned about you because you refuse to eat breakfast or lunch, or it makes me afraid to hear you vomiting. And avoid giving simple solutions. If you just stop, then everything would be fine. We know that, more than anything, they want to stop. That's just not possible. And continue to express your continued support. Remind your friends that you care and want your friend to be healthy and happy. So the importance of continuing care, as you can see, there is so much. There's one thing here I wanted to read at the end. And for those struggling with positive body image, there's some tips here that I talk about in my groups. Appreciate all that your body can do. Every day our body carries us closer to our dreams. It you know, it dances, it runs, it laughs. Honor that part of yourself. I tell my gals and guys, I have guys in my groups too, and they're absolutely wonderful as well. Keep a top 10 list of things you like about yourself, things that aren't related to how much you weigh or what you look like. Read your list often. And add to it as you become aware of the more things to like about you. Look at yourself as a whole person. When you see yourself in a mirror or in your mind, choose not to focus on specific body parts. See yourself as you want others to see you, as the whole person. Surround yourself with positive people. Shut down those voices in your head that tell you your body is not right or that you are a bad person. You can overpower those negative thoughts with positive ones. This is what we call cognitive behavioral therapy, where we replace the negative thoughts and reinforce them with positive. The next time that a patient starts to tear themselves down, they can build themselves right back up with a few quick affirmations that might work for you. We always suggest wearing clothes that are comfortable, that make you feel good about your body. Work with your body, not against it. Paying close attention to the media and those perfectionist messages. Doing something nice for yourself and positive changes that you can make for yourself and changes in the world. So a lot of positive body images body affirmations and positive things that we can do. I think it's important to notice signs of relapse, and I am just going to kind of wrap up with some signs of relapse, because it's so important in identifying what the patient needs to look for and what others can look for. And I'm just going to go over a few of them. And, feeling a need to start to be in control all the time can be a relapse warning sign. Starting repetitive weighing again on the scale, an increase in obsessive thinking about food or weight, believing that success is based on the number of pounds shown on the scale, believing that I can purge just once, okay, high relapse warning sign, being unable to rely on their support system, huge, becoming isolated or showing little sociability, drinking excessive amounts of water, looking at oneself continually in the mirrors, feeling comfortable only in loose-fitting clothing, choosing only safe foods, skipping meals, eating meals extremely fast, eating in ritualistic eating patterns, changing clothes several times a day, becoming hyperactive, restless, unable to sit still, thinking, when I get out of treatment, I can eat, exercise, being secretive, not telling the therapist when having a relapse or struggling to avoid having one. So one thing that I do when I work with my patients in our continuing care groups is we make it a strong emphasis on each of them individually learning their own relapse warning signs and voicing them and repeating them and knowing exactly what they're going to do when a relapse warning sign occurs. Because what happens is there's actually a change in the brain where the patient might not be able to think straight and they might not be able to pull themselves from that stop point. So that's where I have my patients write detailed instructions of what they can do when they reach a stop point. because their brain, the anxiety is kicking in. They're unable to focus and sit still. So I have them write detailed instructions on a little index card and carry it with them of what they will do when they start experiencing relapse warning signs. Have those phone numbers of my sponsor listed. Have my family's support system numbers listed, and I can call them, get an appointment with my therapist. So, again, the continual participation in my recovery is crucial. And I'm just going to end with this is and I tell this to my patients too, to remind them to be patient with yourself. You do not have to be perfect. At times you will find it difficult to, to follow instruction, to be mindful. Mindful observation is a process. Changes will occur gradually over time. Mindfulness is one of the DBT skills, dialectical behavioral therapy, that we use quite a bit in eating disorder treatment and teaching patients to be mindful of what they're doing, mindful when they're eating, mindful when they're knitting, mindful whatever they're doing, practice that.
Pardon the interruption. We've just had our speaker disconnect. Give us just about 30 seconds. We'll get a line reestablished. And again, we do thank you for your patience while we reestablish our doctor's line. Just one moment. Again, we do apologize for our delay. Just one moment. We'll get the doctor reconnected. Thank you so much for your patience. Again, you've been listening to a conference call. We are still awaiting our doctor to get back online. Should be connecting here shortly. Just one moment. Dr. Anderson will be joining us shortly. Once again, please stand by. And Dr. Anderson, your line is open.
Thank you. I'm not sure that everyone heard the very end. I hope so. But I want to thank you all for participating today. And again, thank you for having me, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you. And to help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in this survey today. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. Now let's get started. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by pressing the star key followed by the number that corresponds to your choice. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. For our first question today, this session provided me with a better understanding of the eating disorder recovery process. If you agree, strongly press star 1. If you agree, press star 2. If you disagree, press star 3. If you strongly disagree, press star 4. And we'll pause for just a moment. For our second question today, this session educated me on eating disorder recovery strategies and techniques. If you strongly agree, press star 1. If you agree, press star 2. If you disagree, press star 3. If you strongly disagree, press star 4. Question number 3, overall this session met my expectations. Please select from the following responses. If strongly agree, press star 1. For agree, press star 2. Strongly disagree, press star 3. And strongly disagree, press star 4. Let me read those options again. Overall this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. If you strongly agree, press star 1. If you agree, press star 2. If you disagree, press star 3. And if you strongly disagree, press star 4. And we'll pause again for a moment. Our fourth question today, I would recommend this program to others. Press star 1 if you agree. Press star 2 if you do not agree. For our last question of the day, please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with an eating disorder. Press star 1 if I am an individual with an eating disorder. Press star 2, I'm a family member of someone with an eating disorder. Press star 3, I am a health professional. Press star 4, other. And that concludes our survey for today, and now we would like to take your questions. Today's question and answer session will be conducted electronically. To ask a question, simply press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. A voice prompt on your phone line will request that you record your name for the question and answer session. Please record your name clearly so we may identify your line so you may pose your question. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 for questions, and we'll pause for a moment to assemble our roster. And again, that is star one if you have any questions today. Star one on your touch tone keypad. And Kate, it appears there are no questions today. I'd like to turn things back over to you.
Okay, and thank you so much to everyone for attending, and thank you especially to Jeannie for providing us such wonderful insights today. If anyone has specific questions about any of the therapies discussed today, please contact the Eating Disorder team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Please be sure to mark your calendars also to join our next Eating Disorder Awareness Seminar next month on Tuesday, June 26th at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific Time. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you and have a great day.